Welcome to Montgomery Community Church Podcast. Thank you so much for listening today. We hope this message encourages you and inspires you to grow deeper in your faith. If you'd like to learn more about MCC, you can visit our website at mcc.church.
Well, this is the day that the Lord has made. We will rejoice and be glad in it. Can we give thanks to God for this incredible weekend? I tell you what, it's pretty awesome. Gotta love it. Every moment, we're thankful. Well, I know that I don't know each of you by name. I know that I don't even know the greatest details of the story of your lives. But I do know this. Each one of us, young and old, no matter our skin color, we have all been entrusted by God with certain gifts He longs for us to embrace and then utilize. You've been entrusted with gifts. And some of you, well, you've been entrusted with a magnetic personality. And God has used that to draw people into things that are life-giving for them, filled with hope for them. Other people here, well, you've been entrusted with artistic skills and talents. You make our world more beautiful, and we thank you. Others here, not me, you've been entrusted with the gift of fixing and repairing all kinds of different things. In fact, it seems like there's no end to what you can do. And the rest of us, we just stand in amazement and just watch you. Thank you. It's quite something. And others have been entrusted with the financial means to really bless others and help others who are less fortunate. We have all been entrusted with different things which God desires for us to use in order to further His kingdom and really bless others. That's true. It's also true to say that there are other gifts of which we all possess that God has entrusted to us as well. Some of you may remember a couple months ago, I shared my story about going out and running. Now, you know, my wife Carol years ago told me, Phil, you're a jogger, not a runner. So maybe I went out for my jog, you know, however that looks, right? So I went out for my daily run, my daily jog, and I mean, about a minute in or so, I mean, fire through the back of my leg. I couldn't even move. If you remember me telling this, some of you enjoyed this story a bit too much, I think. And so I was hobbling back, and in a short time, I learned I needed reattachment surgery. One of the most painful things I have ever experienced. The recovery was awful. But much too soon, I mean, almost right after that surgery, I found myself at a Garth Brooks concert. Now, some man from this church had invited us months before to go, before I ever knew I was gonna need surgery, and so there I am sitting in my wheelchair, and I'm enjoying or trying to enjoy the concert. And it was then that I realized I had too much Diet Coke earlier, and I turned around to Carol and said, man, I gotta go, you know? Like, so she wheeled me out, right, and into the atrium there, and I thought, you know, perfect time to kind of do this because everyone else is in the concert. Wrong. There were hundreds and hundreds of people standing in line waiting for the bathroom. It was like they were waiting for the Diamondback roller coaster or something. And Carol just stood there holding the chair going, man, I mean, this is gonna take forever. And then he saw me, a man I have never met and have never seen since. He saw me, and he walked right up to me, and he asked me what was going on. I told him I just had surgery, you know, waiting in line, and he looked at my wife, and he says, I've got this, and he immediately took the chair, and man, I'll tell you what, we went off running. I mean, we're bypassing everybody on the line. He's, you know, calling people to get out of the way, you know, get out of the way. We're gonna push me through into the bathroom, right? And the next thing I know, man, he puts me right up for the stall, right? No time flat, problem solved. And then afterwards, he wheeled me back out, dropped me off with Carol, and that man disappeared from my life as quickly as he had come. Never saw him again. But boy, he saw me. He saw me. And when I thought about that, it's really quite something considering the fact that there were hundreds and hundreds of other people there that day who could have seen me, but they didn't. They were busy looking at their phones, right? Busy talking with other people or just busy standing there looking at nothing. But they didn't see me. He did. And I'll never forget that moment because he touched my life by giving me the gift of seeing. When you stop to think about it, God has entrusted every single one of His children with this gift, a gift He first bestowed upon us so that we could become His sons and His daughters. the powerful, life-changing, life-altering gift of seeing. And because that's true, friends, every single one of us should really respond much like that unworthy woman in the Old Testament. You may know her name. Her name was Hagar. Basically, she's kicked out of the family. She's pregnant. She's got nowhere to go. She finds herself in the wilderness. She's all alone, right? No hope, no future. And then God speaks to her. He says, oh, you have hope. Oh, and you do have a future. And in response, she responded by saying, you are the God who sees me. You are the God who sees me. And God sees you. And God sees me. And since God has chosen to see all of us, I believe we should set our sights on seeing others. That's the call he's placed on us all. And to do that today, we're going to turn to Jesus, right? I think he just models this so beautifully for us. In several places, but in John chapter 5, the story goes like this. Sometime later, Jesus went up to Jerusalem for one of the Jewish festivals. Now there is in Jerusalem near the Sheep Gate a pool, which in Aramaic is called Bethesda, and which is surrounded by five covered colonnades. Here a great number of disabled people used to lie, the blind, the lame, the paralyzed. Now, in our culture today, people lie by the side of the pool all the time, right? I mean, I'm part of this community. We have a community pool, and I love to use it. I actually get in the water. I'm like one of the only ones, because what I learned, about 90% of the people who go to the pool, all they do is lie by the side of the pool. They never get in the pool. It amazes me. I mean, the water's great, right? The point back then, of course, was not just to, you know, lie by the side of the pool. The point was to get into the pool at the right time. That was the goal, the pool of Bethesda. Now, in Aramaic, it means house of mercy or house of grace. Well, over 60 years ago, a German archaeologist living in Jerusalem unearthed remains of this very place, and it was just as it is described in the Bible. It was surrounded by four porticos or porches, with a fifth portico dividing the pool into two separate pools. I've actually been there about five or six times to see this myself. Sections of that pool are like 40 feet deep. Other sections are very shallow so that people could take a bath. So while lounging adjacent to this pool, then the point was that those who were ill would watch and they would wait for when the angel would stir those waters. And whenever the water was stirred, the first person in was the first person healed, maybe the only person healed. Now, some hear that and they go, well, that's a great story, Phil, but really? Really? I mean, did that really happen? What we know is this, that since all kinds of healings have been historically reported at Bethesda, up to two centuries after Christ's death and resurrection, Rome constructed medicinal baths at the same location. In fact, these healing waters had grown to such popularity over time that between 1859 and 1864, a sculpture was constructed in New York's Central Park entitled Angel of the Waters. So you can still be reminded today of the events which took place in John chapter 5 every time you visit New York today. So yes, back then when Jesus walked this earth, crowds of sick people would gather and wait by the water and this anticipated every move. All kinds of people. And yet here in chapter 5, we're introduced to just one. One person by the side of the pool. The text tells us, one who was there had been an invalid for 38 years. One who was there had been an invalid for 38 years. Now, when you stop to think about it, this man had not just been lame for 38 years. He'd been coming to those waters for almost four decades. Think about that. Four decades. And while the text doesn't really provide us any clues, we know that someone brought him there. He was lame. He couldn't get there himself. You see, just like the man at the Garth Brooks concert saw me and stepped in to help me and bring me right up to the stall, he had someone in his life, this man who brought him close to the waters, but not close enough to the waters. The problem was they kept bringing him and leaving him there just short of where he needed to be. And so the absence of a person to help him to get into those waters is why the text tells us he'd been lame for 38 years. I don't know about you, but that is a long time to not think proactively, right? Isn't that a long time? I mean, what you think somewhere, like maybe year two or year three, it might have dawned on him to say, you know, like, could you hang out with me a little while longer? You know, help me into the waters, or maybe get another friend. One friend to bring him there and another friend to help him in. But he's there for 38 years. And despite this man's lack of strategic initiative, the Bible tells us that when Jesus saw him lying there and learned that he had been in this condition for a long time, he asked him, "Do you want to get well?" And in one simple verse, Jesus teaches us this lesson. You first have to see someone before you can engage with them. And you think, well, that's Phil, that's great. It's like, that's all you got? Like, that's it? Like, isn't there a deeper lesson than that? Yeah, that's obvious. I have to see someone before I can engage with them. And I would ask, is it that obvious? The next morning, after I went to that Garth Brooks concert, I came to church. I was nervous, again, didn't really feel comfortable being in public yet, but I came to church that Sunday morning. Carol brought me, and I came, late. You know, on purpose, because I didn't want to, cause a bunch of stir or anything. I just wanted to get here and really not upset anything. And so I arrived late, and I wheeled the chair into the very back row. In fact, right next there to the sound booth, right in front of the doors right there. And so I'm sitting in my wheelchair in the middle of this service, right, enjoying every single moment. At one point, they even said, Phil's not here today, even though I was, they didn't see me. He's not here today because he just had surgery, let's keep him in prayer. And I thought, well, that was nice that they mentioned me. And the service went on, and it was beautiful, and it was powerful. And at the end, everybody was leaving. Many people walking down this center aisle. Well, I'm right there in the back. And so as people passed by, I mean, some of them I didn't know, some of them I most certainly recognized, other people I really knew. And so as they walked by, I'm waving at them. You know, say, hi, hey, here I am, hey. Know what happened that day? Not a single person saw me. Not a single person noticed me. People 2-3 feet away walked right on by. You see, man, so many times our minds are so focused. They're focused on what I'm doing next. I'm focused on getting my next cup of coffee. I'm focused on getting out to the parking lot or focused on I gotta pick up the kids. Our minds are so focused, but our eyes are not focused. You first have to see someone before you can engage with them. So despite the fact that crowds then of people had gathered all around the pool that day, Jesus saw that lame man. And Jesus asked the lame man a question. Do you want to get well? I think that's a legitimate question given the fact this guy had been lying there for 38 years failing to think strategically. I mean, it makes me wonder really how often we can be so close to receiving healing, yet so far from obtaining it due to our own lack of having a strategic faith. And in the face of Christ's honest question, the lame man responds with his excuses. He said, sir, I have no one to help me into the pool when the water is stirred. While I'm trying to get in, someone else goes down ahead of me. I don't know about you, but if I took the time, right, to actually step in and help someone, and the first thing I heard was, were there excuses? I don't know how long maybe I'd hang out there. You know, in my way of thinking, excuses can reveal the true heart of a person. And sometimes, someone who gives an excuse often blames their condition on someone else. It's the first thing. It's because of that or because of them that I'm here. And sometimes, and please hear me, just sometimes, excuses reveal that a person has grown so comfortable by the attention they've gotten from their pain, they don't really want it to go away, because if it did, well, that's the center of all the relationships. What would they do now? You see, if I'm honest, excuses drive me absolutely crazy unless I'm the one giving them, right? Isn't that your case? I mean, I hate excuses, but when I give them, that's okay. And yet all of this misses an essential point that Christ teaches us in the text. Remember those words, when Jesus saw him. You see, when you see someone as Jesus sees them, you see more than what's external. You actually see what's going on internally as well. And that requires time, of course, care, a bit of compassion. You see, like the man at the Garth Brooks concert, he saw more than just my external thing, right? He saw the internal pain of another. As a result, he stepped in and kind of changed my world. You first have to see someone before you can engage with them. Jesus saw that man. And even so, the man responded with his excuses. And I think while his response may surprise many people, it didn't, surprise Jesus at all. Remember, Jesus saw him. He saw his heart. He knew what was going on inside of his heart. That's why Jesus wasn't surprised. I think it's only the person who merely notices another who's turned off by a response they never saw coming. Jesus saw him. And this was a hallmark of Jesus' life. You see, he was always observing. He was always watching. He was always responding. For example, in the Gospel of Mark, it says that when Jesus landed and saw a large crowd, he had compassion on them because they were like sheep without a shepherd. So he began teaching them many things. So Jesus had compassion on them because he first saw them. Jesus also saw a guy named Nathanael. He eventually became an apostle. In fact, Jesus saw Nathanael even though Nathanael wasn't aware that anyone was even watching. And in John 1, it says, when Jesus saw Nathanael approaching, he said to him, "Here truly is an Israelite in whom there is no deceit." "Well, how do you know me?" Nathanael asked. Jesus answered, "I saw you while you were still under the fig tree before Philip called you." Jesus was basically saying, "I saw you before anyone else saw you." And friends, there's certainly been many people right here in our church, right here at MCC, who've been busy seeing others as well. I mean, if that weren't the case, how could repairs have been made for a woman in Avondale who desperately needed care and prayer? People right here from this church saw her. Or how could various men coming out of incarceration and recovering from addictions have received love and compassion, sometimes healing? People right here in this church saw them. Or how could relationships have been formed with people living right down the street at Village Green, who otherwise often feel like they're invisible? Because Jesus, people right here loved them and they saw them. Or how could some women who have long taught Sunday school here for decades, right, now be assisted by adults who were once their students? Well, because when they were children, they felt seen and valuable. And when they grew up, they wanted to step in and help as well. So there's a lot more seeing going on than you might have imagined. It's like a friend of mine who wrote me just a week or so ago. He said, "When I was a youth pastor studying Greek, I took my studies to a Greek restaurant for an afternoon snack, hoping I might be inspired to learn more while eating Greek food. Well, the restaurant was filled with people, buzzing with energy. And while I was eating and studying, I suddenly felt the quiet moving of the Lord. It was as if the Lord was asking me, 'What are you doing to influence all of these people for me?' Well, for the first time, I slowly scanned the restaurant, looking at the faces of men and women and young people, laughing, sharing in conversation, and enjoying some wonderful food. And I didn't know how to answer the Lord, so I said, 'I'm studying Greek.' And the minute I said that, it sounded ridiculous. The sense I had was that the Lord responded by saying, 'Well, that ought to do it.' I was totally humbled," he wrote. "It was a defining moment in my commitment to truly care about people and their eternities, to look at people, not just crowds. I can honestly say that God got my attention that day, and it has changed me." Friends, seeing someone is a whole lot easier whenever compassion guides our actions. That's why after hearing this man's excuses, then Jesus responded with words all his own. He looked at him and he said, "Get up, pick up your mat and walk." At once the man was cured. He picked up his mat and walked. Miraculous. But I want you to imagine something. Can you imagine what would happen if you and I truly started seeing people instead of seeing only our agendas? I think the gospel would spread like wildfire. I think lives would be changed. Oh, that you and I would truly see as Christ sees them. Friends, our friends, our family members, our neighbors, and all those previously unknown to us would really experience life and hope and value and transformation by receiving from us the simple gift of seeing them. You first have to see someone before you can engage with them. But there's another lesson that Jesus teaches us as well. Take a look at what happens next here. It says, the day on which this took place was a Sabbath. And so the Jewish leaders said to the man who had been healed, it is the Sabbath. The law forbids you to carry your mat. But he replied, the man who made me well said to me, pick up your mat and walk. So they asked him, who is this fellow who told you to pick it up and walk? The man who was healed had no idea who it was, for Jesus had slipped away into the crowd that was there. Well, if you live in our culture, I mean, one of the first questions would be, Jesus, what were you thinking? What were you thinking? You did not take the opportunity here to market yourself. That's what you gotta do, right? I mean, Jesus, you didn't take time to take a selfie, really? And you didn't take time to stand next to the man so somebody else could take your picture and then you could post it online so millions of people could see what you've done. Jesus, I thought you were trying to start a movement. I thought you were trying to gain a greater group of followers. Jesus, you didn't even post a simple picture so thousands of people would have the chance to like you. And Jesus, on top of all those misses, you didn't even give the man your name? I mean, that's incredibly lame. You did not market yourself. But perhaps we miss a lesson. You have to see someone before you can engage with them. Second lesson, you must forfeit your need to be seen to offer someone the gift of seeing. You got to forfeit your need to be seen in order to offer someone the gift of seeing. You see, you'll never see someone else if all you see is your own reflection in the mirror. So in order to see another's face, it means we have to abandon our desire to be seen on Facebook and Instagram and all the other places and spaces. We live in a world that says, oh, it's all about me. Look at me. Look what I've done. And we look at opportunities in a way go, boy, I could leverage that for my name, for my fame. Oh, you got to forfeit your need to be seen in order to offer somebody the gift of seeing. See, humility is the key that unlocks the door to truly seeing another and helping them. But true humility will also do something more than that. It will open the doorway to a future conversation if that same person, after you've helped to kind of touch their life, maybe returns back to their former way of life. Humility will unlock the door to that conversation. It did for Jesus. Take a look. Later, Jesus found him at the temple and said to him, see, you are well again. Stop sinning or something worse may happen to you. Well, don't you find it interesting here? I do. That the text doesn't tell us what wrong this man had committed. I mean, Jesus knows, the man knows, but it doesn't seem important that we know. But we want to. Oh, we want to. That's why we're often tempted to know the lurid details of whatever happened there. And if we don't, well, then we're tempted to make something up so then we can tell others so we look more important in their eyes. See, pride wants others to see us. Humility wants us to see others. And when we do, that other person will be more open to hearing us if down the road, for whatever reason, we have something further that needs to be said to them. See, friends, truly seeing someone derives from humility, which leads to compassion, which leads to healing, which leads to the authenticity needed to address another's problems in ways they are open to hearing. That's why the text says the man went away and told the Jewish leaders that it was Jesus who had made him well. Bottom line, truly seeing someone always helps them to see Jesus. Truly seeing someone always helps them to see Jesus. And when it comes to Jesus, well, he always led from the servant seat. And if I'm honest, this is a lesson I keep learning in my life because I've often thought that the only people who need the gift of seeing are the ones who obviously need help, right? And yet I learned that this is far from the truth. And one Saturday, I was the one in need of help. I was. And that's why I found myself sitting in a different chair, not a wheelchair, but the kind of chair you sit in when you go to the hair salon. You see, my flight was leaving the next morning, and I received this phone call, you know, and I didn't get it. It went to my voicemail that said there was something wrong with my flight, so I had to call in. I've long learned that since that point, you just get the app for the airline, and it saves you a bunch of time. Didn't really think about that, so I called back, and I'm on hold, on hold, on hold, on hold. I'm not going to say the name of the airline because I've been long over my bitterness years ago, right? But anyway, I'm on hold. But every time I take a vacation, I always get my hair cut, you know, so it's just easier to take care of. It doesn't take so much time, and of course, so I'll look good. And so I'm going to get there. I got to get my hair cut, but I'm on hold, and it's really frustrating me. And so eventually, the place is going to close. So I get in the car. My phone's still on, you know, speaker mode and everything, right? And I get to the hair salon. I put my name in. Eventually, they call my name. And as I'm walking to the chair with the person who's going to style my hair, right, I looked at her and said, oh, please accept my apology. You know what? The airline has me on hold now for almost 2 hours. I can't hang up right now. I've got to resolve this issue. I've got to leave in the morning. So I feel really bad about that. And then I said this to her. I said, all people are precious. All people are valuable. And so I'm sorry that I can't treat you like you are right now because I got to keep this phone on in my lap. And when I sat down, she said, oh, don't worry about it. Before COVID, you know, people used to sit in my chair and talk to me all the time, all the time. But now it's common for people to place a phone call while I'm cutting their hair. It's really become common that people get on a Zoom meeting for their work while I'm cutting their hair. It's just the way that everyone operates now. What she was really saying is this. It's common for people not to see me, even though my job is to help them look better so other people see them. Ouch. Friends, everyone needs to be seen. Even people who look like they're successful and well off, they need to be seen as well. We all need to be seen because we are all made in the image of God. We are all valuable. And since we all need to be seen, let's never forget those words, when Jesus saw him. When Jesus saw him. Friend, when will you start seeing others? When will I start seeing others? I say the time is now. The opportunities are all around us. So may we never forget that God has entrusted us with this gift, a gift he first bestowed upon us, the gift of seeing. Now it's a gift we're all called to share, because when we do, we will see others, and others will see Christ in us. Will you pray with me? Dear Father, we thank you that thousands of years ago you saw us in our need. And you sent a solution, your only son, the Savior, to die on the cross for us because you saw us. You loved us. Lord, help us to see others. We live in a culture that tells us it's really just about me. Everything's about me. Oh, no, it's not. Help us to abandon the lie. And help us to live with eyes wide open, that we would see others, the beauty of others. And Lord, when we see them, help us to share with them, help us to serve them, help us to speak to them words that they so desperately need to hear. Use us, Lord. Help us to be Jesus to others, that others would see you and love you, come to know you, follow you, be healed by you. This is our prayer, Lord. May it be so.
Thanks for listening. You can stay connected throughout the week by following Montgomery Community Church on Facebook and Instagram. For more information about MCC, visit our website at mcc.church.